pleasure to be with you, and I'm always impressed that those World Peace meetings are dedicated and enthusiastic people are. So I tell you briefly about this story, which we call The Children of the Moon, and which is a joint work with Emmanuel Di Folco, who unfortunately couldn't be here today because he would really have been the person to give the talk instead of me, and a group of engineers from Paris Observatory in Meudon, which was in my lab because, being an astrophysicist now retired, I have, of course, still connections with the observatory. And to tell you the story of this project, I had heard of IXO through Antonio Batro, who is the director of education, I think, on One Laptop Per Child in Boston. And then I had a meeting with Negroponte in Rome, where he explained with great enthusiasm the project. And at the time, one thing struck me, beyond, of course, the admiration for the foresight and will, that I was questioning myself, and I discussed that with both of them too, whether some adequate tools for teachers could enhance the practical use of IXOs and be a tool for a better education, especially in the countries like Uruguay, Argentina, Peru, where the status of primary education is in many places very difficult. So that was trying to think one step beyond just giving away the IXOs and letting people develop application. Then came the World Year of Astronomy 2009, where there were many initiatives, and then we decided that we could do something with the IXO, and it was the first model then, which was not terribly suitable yet. And what we decided was that there was an avenue to explore, which was taking pictures of the moon with a small telescope. Now, why the moon? Because it's the only astronomical object which can be observed all the time without any risk, contrary to the sun, which is large enough to, with a proper imaging process, give images on which you can really do scientific work, do scientific education, and which also presents all aspects in literature, history, culture, which could be connected by the teacher and make this approach really broad in terms of interdisciplinary and discovery. So that was the first point. The second point was, to do that, one needed to have large images. And at first we thought to develop a complete unit with a CCD and a camera, but then we considered that we would save money and make it easier if it was using the camera of the IXO itself. So that was the final choice, but it had to be tested. So we did the test. And then the problem was the cost. Can we make something which ultimately in mass production would cost only a few euros, because otherwise it would prevent it to be done on large scale? So this led us to what you have in front of you. Take commercial optics, which actually is of good quality. We have tried several of them, three of them, cutting into binoculars is probably the best and cheapest way to do it, and then adapt it in a fairly stable way, so neither the children nor the teacher would have any difficulty in fitting this little piece, which just screws onto the panel, and having no problem with alignment, etc. The IXO had a very good advantage, is that you can put it on a table, change the angle, and turn it around, and this makes very easy pointing a celestial object with sufficient accuracy for the moon. And of course, then there is the motion of the Earth, so which by itself is interesting to study. So then, but one can track easily So this is really available for children. Then the next step, once this was clearly possible, was to think of a tool for the teacher. And that was coming back to my initial concern about IXO's use, is that our experience at La Main à la Pâte in many countries, especially in rural or poor areas, is that teachers are extremely close to the children. They like them, they wish to communicate knowledge to them, to educate them, to work with parents. But those primary school teachers are usually very ignorant, very poorly prepared to science, especially, and sometimes to other fields as well. So our view was that we should, as we do in many other instances with resources for teachers, we should help them by giving them a protocol to implement, while keeping the freedom of innovation and what is fundamental in La Main à la Pâte vision of science education, the ability of children to interact. And this is, in fact, this interaction capability of the IXO, which on a given area with a reasonable distance between each IXO, children can talk together, exchange things. And to my view, this is the still unique capability of the IXO compared to many other electronic tools which we have around. And this, combined with a large-scale distribution in some countries, makes it, for now, maybe 10 years from now will be different, an ideal tool to experiment collaborative work between children on a topic which is prepared by the teacher, guided by the teacher, and leads to interesting and enjoying conclusion for the student. So, I will skip this. I have a long PowerPoint, which I think is or will be on the site, but I will only keep some of it just because time is limited. So this is a summary: images of the moon, primary school children, look at one country, namely Uruguay, to start with, but on the long term, why not larger scale, and easy use with pedagogical documents for the teacher. So this is historical on the moon. this is the important, so this you have it on your eyes. Now, the idea was to use the whatever exists in the IXO, but to slightly adapt it, because there were some difficulties. For instance, if you see that if one uses directly the camera without adapting a telescope, the moon takes 6 pixels, on which is very, very small. So you can do anything with that. You could have a nice image of the sky, but it doesn't go. Then there is an automatic gain on the image, which is fine to always adapt to the illumination. But if you have a bright moon on a dark sky, then the average illumination is the dark sky, and then you get underexposed images. So we had to modify that, thanks to the help of the developer who works with us too. We finally have chosen an intermediate 16 magnitude magnification, because if you take more, you would have a larger image, more details, would be nice, but then the stability would be very critical. Vibrations would be very critical, and pointing also, because the image would drift very fast with Earth motion. So this is a kind of compromise, which gives 96 pixels. So you see it's about a fifth of the screen, which is not too bad. So we have developed an activity for the teacher. You see, this is an illustration. This was before the automatic gain was removed and after. After, it's just adapt to the brightness of the moon. And this is very important, because if you think of children in school, it's in daytime usually, and at low latitude, as many developing countries are, also the day, 12 hours more or less all year round. So it makes critical to be able to observe the moon during daytime. Also, they can organize observations at nighttime. So this contrast issue was a really serious one. Now, we didn't want this to be just a toy in the hands of the children making nice pictures and not exploiting them. So the pedagogical project is constructed in detail to exploit the image. And you see here the list of the points. Discover what a numerical image is, the moon phases, which is the most obvious observation, then go to a simulation with shadows and spheres, polystyrene spheres, for instance, in the class. Understand the scattering by a surface, that the moon shines, but it's not a mirror, and it's not its own light. This is not so easy for children. A very interesting thing one can do, I'll show that in a minute, the size of the moon changes. It changes in two manners. One is artificial, in a sense, because when you see the moon near the horizon, you have the impression that it's bigger than in the sky. This is an optical illusion, and children will explore this optical illusion because they will see that the image of the moon on their screen doesn't change size. So they will have to understand why it doesn't change size when it's near the horizon and higher in the sky. And they will have to think then on the fact that an image in the eye is not the image we see with the brain. The image is the product of the brain activity, not the product only of the retina. And the second aspect is that they will see that with time, the size of the moon changes, something which remains unnoticed for most of us, just because the orbit of the moon around the Earth is not a circle, but an ellipse. So that's a very interesting discovery for them to understand this change of size. Then there is the study of lunar eclipses. Fortunately, lunar eclipses are quite frequent. There is one or two every year in any location. And they tell us something, both now and historically, about the measurement of the relative size of the moon with respect to the Earth, which was a problem the Greeks are already attacked. And finally, a very nice thing which I will show you. Now, I will pass that. You just concentrate on a few images. Many children say the moon emits light, or in the shadow, dark part of the moon, is due to the fact that Earth is blocking the light from the sun. So they have to change their representation. And one can help them by activities in the class that the teacher would guide. Then there's something on a numerical image, the moon phases. that's the processing sugar tool. Simulation in the class, see, with spheres of polystyrene. Then the reliefs and shadows. This is very interesting because you remember historically that it's Galileo, when he first observed the shadow at the terminator of the moon, could be immediately able to derive the height of the mountains on the moon. And they can do the same. In fact, this was also a leading factor in the choice of the magnification, beside the other aspects which I gave, that hopefully we would be able to measure crater shadows near the terminator. And then children could elaborate on the height of the mountains on the moon, which is interesting. And this is the variation of the apparent size of the moon, exactly with its orbit between the apogee and the perigee. You see it's significant, it can be seen, and then it can open to a very interesting discussion with the teacher. this is the eclipse. where you have the Earth's shadow, which, of course, it's a shadow on black, so you don't see the shadow. But on a sequence of images, you can easily reconstruct the aspect of the shadow by edges, and it's a fraction of a circle. So this leads to the fact that the Earth is a sphere, and this historically that was the first demonstration of that, even before the ships far away, disappearing in the sea, and then the relative size of the moon and of the Earth. So it's a very rich activity. The Earth-Moon distance, this is also very nice because this will force children and teachers to collaborate from two different points on the Earth. And it's using the parallax. if you are at two different locations on the Earth, and if you look at the same moon on the same background of stars, the position of the moon with respect of this background of stars will be different. Simply, it's just like closing one eye and the other eye, and the front objects move with respect to the background. And if you know the distance between the two points, then it's not even trigonometry. It's a very simple triangle analysis, which leads to the distance of the moon. So with this, observing, communicating between two different sites through internet, and Lama Lapat has a great experience on that, on other projects, like measuring the radius of the Earth, then the children can derive the distance of the moon, which is quite nice. I mean, with this, measuring the distance of the moon. So they measure the size of the moon and the distance of the moon. This is an example of the difference. This is a simulation, you see, from the sky, the same sky, the same moment, seen from France and from Uruguay. You see the same stars, but the moon is not at the same position. And from that, you derive the distance. So this is the... I'll pass the specifications. Preliminary test, I mentioned that. We had to change the gain. Those are simulated images. Of course, the more we magnify, the better it is. I'll pass that. I think I will stop there and not go into the details of every sequence. Now, every sequence is written in great detail for the teacher. It's in English. It could be, of course, in other language. It will be. And now I say you, as a conclusion, before we can discuss some indications on the plans. We have, and we still want, to test with children in classroom and teachers in France. So we have done that, unfortunately, very late in June. So time was too short. So we continue that in Lons-le-Saunier, which is east of France. With teachers who are very interested and who help us. So we will have three or four classes, rural areas, poor environment, so just to be sure that we adapt properly the sequence and the system. Then, after discussion with Antonio Batro, we decided that the first country we would deploy it would be Uruguay. There are several reasons for that. Uruguay is part of a network of Lama Lapat in Latin America, which is very active. Argentina is close, Batro is close. The director of the planetarium in Uruguay is willing to take the next step over. And Uruguay, as you know, has, I don't know how many today, 300,000 ixos distributed to children, or maybe more. So for large-scale, full-scale exploitation, it's a good place to start from, thinking that after that, there is South Argentina and Peru, where also Lama Lapat is present, where we could expand. But that's for the future. So the first thing will be translation in Spanish and adaptation to the Spanish cultural and educational background. Because of the change of hemisphere, the class... School starts in March in Uruguay, which fits very well because we will have completely achieved the development in January or so, finished the test, included the feedback from the test into the existing program, and send the material to Uruguay. So beginning in March, there will be a number of classes, maybe 10 or so maximum, for a test now in context. In parallel with that, it will be up to the planetarium to decide the process of mass production, whether they keep the existing or negotiate a contract with Bushnell, which is the company which produces those binoculars, cheap binoculars, for mass production, or if they find another producer in China. Actually, we have looked at possible producers in China. sort of starting from scratch, but we haven't found anyone really interested. Those people, they think in millions of units or tens of millions of units. So if you tell them I only want 10,000, they say no. So it's probably wise to have a two steps program, one with commercial existing things slightly adapted and then amplified. Okay, so that's the status of the project. It's of course, it's open to certainly improvement, ideas, further exploitation, and one could think to keep this idea of teacher protocol plus some tool adapted to IXO for many other subjects, like microscopy or many other things. So, well, I stayed about in my time, so...
I may have one question. It would be about, is there any similar project other than this one at La Main à la Pâte based on some technological device, or is it completely a new technology?
That's a very important point. In fact, we were hesitant, you know that, to move into this, because one of the principles of the science education program is that children should stay away from screens and manipulate and have experience of the reality, see that the reality is not as obedient as a screen or a computer program could be. You cannot manipulate the facts. So we were hesitant to move into this direction. But then there are some aspects of knowledge of the world which would remain very primitive without a tool. And as long as this tool is not too opaque for them, we thought it was worthwhile to explore that. Of course, they will not know enough optics, but they manipulate cameras all the time now in their telephones or everywhere. They see images with pixels all the time, so we thought, maybe we can make the project sufficiently exploratory and hands-on in character that they have to be careful, they have to have a protocol to reporting the measurements, and all that is a good elementary science education. So we decide to go ahead. We'll see, but we could have another one similar to this. And maybe it's worthwhile that I tell you something about another project, completely different from astronomy, which may end up on IXO one day or another. You know that Antonio Batro is a specialist of brain, and quite independently of him, we have decided that we should make for teachers a project which would help them to teach the function of brain facing screens. Because today it's the fate of almost every child to face screen, and what happens then? You see an image, what happens? So in a sense, they know about respiration, they know about digestion, they know about blood circulation, they know nothing about this fundamental organ we have, which is our brain. So we thought that we could build a sequence, and in a year from now, this sequence will be ready for testing in classrooms. And then we could think to adapt it to the IXO.
David Bourguignon, I'm very interested in the experimentation you mentioned between several schools for measuring, I think, the distance.
The distance of the moon, yes.
Don't you think this could be, in fact, the main attraction for teachers to build experiments that are worldwide distributed, to really go beyond, I would say, the leçon de choses style of teaching, which is nice, but maybe given the tools people have, given the idea of the internet, which is about people communicating with one another, maybe a more, let's say, contemporary way to teach science, you know, to help to make children understand that by working together, you can have results that you cannot have, you know.
Well, I fully agree with you, but the point is that the whole sequence is made of collaborative work, because one basic ingredient in science is to compare data. I mean, you are never right alone. You are right if you're compared with others doing the same thing independently. So I mentioned that in my talk before. So already the collaboration between the children to measure, say, the diameter of the shadow of the Earth is a very essential ingredient, and it goes far beyond what you call the son chose, which actually was a very interesting way to do science, but long time ago, not a modern one, of course. Now, the next step is to do collaboration at distance. We have explored that with an activity which you might, if you are interested, you might find it on the website of La Malapad, which is called Eratosthenes, which is measuring, like it was done in history, the size of the Earth by observing at the same time, namely noon, the length of a shadow at different latitudes. So the equipment is simple. You take a pole in the ground, you measure the length of the shadow, that's all. There is many, many schools worldwide which today collaborate to do that. So we have a first experience which shows that this is very attractive, as you say, for teachers. And this will be a little more difficult because you have to take a picture, you have to see both the moon and the stars on the picture to recognize the same stars. So it's more difficult than the length of a shadow at noon in the schoolyard. But it's feasible. And I have great hopes for that. But it doesn't need to be between two countries. It can be the distance. If the distance is of the order of 500 kilometers, it's already measurable. So, of course, if it's done from Mexico and Argentina, it's even much better.
Just a side question. Is your association involved in organizing this community around such worldwide experiments, or what I mean is, why not having a kind of a social network about such experiment that would help teachers get in touch with each other and really organize and easily communicate?
Yes, the La Malapad is not an association, it's a project which is carried by the French Academy of Science and partners. So, but it has this network, of collaborative networks, on Eratosthenes and on many other subjects. So, expanding to this activity will be quite easy and natural. But we would like first to be sure that in one place it works well, because there is nothing worse than disappointing people, you know that. So, this is why next year will be the year of test in Uruguay. And then we would also like to remain close to your community of OLPC groups, sugar groups worldwide, because you have much more ideas on this instrument than we do. So the best will be to organize a kind of joint project around that. But that's no problem. I mean, Emmanuel Di Folco is a very bright young astronomer. He has his full career in front of him. He has developed that. He's ready to continue. So.
Simple activity doesn't have that much information. If it doesn't properly track the location of the moon. It's really just looking at lookup tables. But there are any features that you would like to see it have that might help the rest of the project that you're working on?
I'm not sure I see your question. But to know which kind of help we give to teachers who are ignorant on the subject?
In your slideshow, you had Moon, which is one of the entities that I maintain.
He's the maintainer of the developer behind the Sugar Moon activity.
Oh.
So the question
I see.
Is whether there are some features in this activity that you want or that you think are useful for this for all this moon observation. So he's the guy you want to do to make work.
I see. Okay. I think I think we have done some the development were made up to now, the Sugar development or software development were made with the help of now. Yeah, I have to be sure I tell his name right. So Anish Mangal, you know him. So
that was for the video camera work.
Yes, but actually he contributed also to some of the software adaptation. But that's not finished, and that's a bottleneck at the moment. And because he travels between India and Peru all the time, it doesn't make the work particularly easy. So if you are prepared to help us, I'm sure that would be, at this moment, it would be very critical.
Just a word to say that Anish was supposed to come, but couldn't get his visa on time.
I see. Oh, too bad.
The Activity Central company based in Paraguay offered to pay for his travel, so that was sorted out, but he couldn't come because of this visa issue.
I see.
But we are in touch, and I guess we can continue the discussion with Anish about these issues, and we can help make a short list of priorities.
Okay, that would be very helpful, because the system will be in the classes in October, and there are a few things to fine-tune now, and I don't think it's very complicated, but don't ask me what it is.
Do you have the hardware already? Like
yes.
Those,
yes, we have now 30 telescopes,
mm-hmm.
which have been sent actually already to the classes, to the schools.
And will those be available later for buying for other countries deployments? Do you have an idea?
Oh, this is a question we have not really thought about, because the manpower behind all that is benevolent and very quite limited. So, of course, my guess would be that there would be other places interested, especially when I see your eyes. So then we would have to think the way to do it. What I could assume is when Uruguay, said this coming winter, would have discussed and found an industrial outlet appropriate. There's no reason that this, instead of producing for Latin American countries, would not produce for other places. And the larger the better, because the price would go down. So it's my guess. But it would be reasonable to wait until January or February, unless you have bright ideas about possible places which could also implement it soon. Yeah.
And for the availability of the telescope and the hardware, we have tomorrow this little challenge about doing some projects, small projects that for the code camp.
And the first prize for this challenge, we will just vote between us and elect the best challenge accomplished, achieved. And the first prize, thanks to Lamar, apparently, be this hardware, this telescope. So. Okay, so now I know. So, Tony.
Was it Make magazine that has all these articles about how to make things?
Yes.
And an article like that for how someone could make this telescope step by step. Because I'm gathering that you're making it now from materials that could be made available by taking apart a binocular or something.
Well, we have looked at that because it was our initial thought. You can find companies selling lenses, plastic lenses, for instance, quite cheap. But in fact, except if they are really professional people helping to make the telescope, if you want a good quality image, and without a good quality image, it's pointless, you know. A good quality image means no spherical aberration. The edges of the image have to be as good as the center of the image. No chromatic aberration, so the blue image has to be as good as the red image. Otherwise, you have colors at the edge and fuzzy images. And you have to have the sharpness of the image too. Those commercial products have been carefully optically studied for that. So again, of course, you can do that in your optics lab and do as well. I mean, but it would take a good optician engineer to have the right product. So buying a Bushnell for $5 probably much easier. Of course, what one should do at a point in the documentation going along with the project would be to give an optical schematics of what is inside the by the monocular, and so the teacher can for himself or herself understand what's inside. There's no magic inside. So.
Before we take one last question, I would have one question. Is about the network of teachers. I think I know Lamar Lepat from very long. I had discussion with David Bruce, and it was really interesting to go into detail with him in this interview on the various steps of building this network of teachers. So for the first very years, like a bunch of teachers producing a lot of content, and then by when Lamar Lepat get more institutionalized, having all this content spread, more teacher but less content per teacher, and then the third step to build really the network outside of France and to find the appropriate tools. I think OIPC and Sugar in general are very, very far from even the first step. I mean, far from having teachers working together on producing content or on producing training guide or activity guides. So my question would be, what was for you the very main direction to make this network of teachers a success, and what was maybe the pitfalls or?
Yeah, this is an important point you raised there, because teachers, speak about primary school teachers, are under a lot of pressure, and in many countries, especially developing ones, are not well paid. So very often they have a second job in the day. So I know in Argentina, for instance, teachers who work 60 hours a week, or in Chile, just to make a living. So helping them is has to be well thought, because they would stay away if you ask them too much work, for instance. That's the first point. Second point is that they have a professional obligation to follow a curriculum. And in some countries, this is enforced very strictly. In France, in some instances, it also enforced quite strictly. So you can always propose activities for them, very challenging, interesting ones, but for them, as long as it's not clear that it contributes to the curriculum and that they can defend with respect to their authorities, inspectors, and so on, what they do, then they would stay away or do it marginally. So you were mentioning La Malapate, one of our challenge has been to agree with the educational authorities, with the ministry in France, that what we were doing was recommended or at least accepted by the institution. And this is true in any country. It's true in China, it's true in Latin America. So teachers have very little scientific background, little time, and they are in a rather constraining system. So to build a network, you have to make sure that what you propose is taking into account those constraints. And what we found is exactly what you described, is that creating a nucleus which demonstrates the feasibility, so in for La Malapate it's the pilot centers, where one works close enough with teachers, with their inspectors, with the resources that they see it's feasible, then this nucleus is rather enthusiastic and strong, and then one can begin to expand, to disseminate what they have produced to broader scales, and eventually in the rest of the world. But for instance, if you make a very nice resource, like this one, assuming it's nice, you put it on the web, and you say, teachers from Latin America, this is in Spanish, go ahead, use it. Result will be maybe one out of 100,000 or 10,000 teachers will use it, see? So thinking again, if we begin in Latin America with you, I think the sound process will be have 20, 50 enthusiastic teachers in Uruguay, make a nucleus, test that in depth, have a working session to prepare them to use the feedback that may take some months of work with them. Then from that, make a large meeting with not individual teacher because cost of travel, but inspectors or advisor, pedagogical advisor from a much broader area, maybe Latin America, and then register people, etc., and then grow up from that. But always have the resource, the local conditions, and the education authorities supporting whatever is done. That was our philosophy. And the best is to begin.
So I think it's a good word for the end. Just a small anecdote I remember now. When I had the chance, when I was young, 3 years ago, to step by the MIT. I was sitting next to Marvin Minsky. I was so impressed. And in the meeting, he had this sentence, this paradoxon, saying that very little teachers, the ones who teach science, 99% of them never met a scientist. I think it's nice to think about this small paradox, and I get two ideas from this small sentence. The first one is that the more people from deployment, from Olympus deployment, get together and go to the ground, the more people in these countries could build their own networks, as Pierina just suggested.
And the second small idea is just that it's very nice, and it's the first time in my life that the moon has been presented by such an astrophysicist. So thanks very much again. We have a 2-minute break, and then we start the demonstration about Nosikomba deployment. So we have 5 minutes of coffee break, small surprise by Shen, and the Nosikomba deployment after that. Thank you again.
Thank you.